Welcome to Karen and Zach's story. Karen has been very courageous to share her beautiful son Zach and her journey through grief of Firstly, in a hope that other brave parents can connect to her story and seek the support they need. My name is Georgia Howard and I'm the Clinical Services Director. Here at Firstly, we are a trauma-informed organisation and we offer therapy free of charge. If you or a loved one are struggling with the sudden death of a child and are seeking support, reach out on our website and send us a referral because we are here to help. This story contains discussion of the death of a child, details of which you may find upsetting. If you find this content upsetting and need support, reach out to Firstly because we're here to help.
So Zach was our first child. He was born on the 21st September 2019 and he was like our little missing piece. So we had just went silent grade in the house when we found out we were pregnant, and when we were 6 months pregnant we got the keys and we were ploughing away at the house. I was stripping wallpaper but it was a lovely little project and it just felt like everything was coming together. And yeah, he was born on the 21st September 2019 at 8:19. And he was just such a joy. Oh my God, like Zach was just the best baby. He really was. He brought so much happiness and joy to our lives. He was such a happy baby. I have loads of nieces and nephews and I've been around children like my whole life, but everyone even said it to us, he was such a happy baby. He loved people. He was a people person. He was so social even from when he was so young. Anyone that gave him attention, if he locked eyes with anyone on the street, he gave them this huge big beaming smile. And he was just the best. He loved, he loved people, he loved being outside, he loved the park. The park was our second home. St. Anne's Park is where we were there 5 or 6 times a week. He just loved fun, he loved mischief. He thought his dad was the funniest person on earth. Like, they just used to have so much fun and crack. He loved animals, so he loved dogs and he loved ducks. So Zach is known for ducks now. So ducks like in a pond, we always used to go feed the ducks in St. Anne's and then rubber ducks. He loved cars, his little momos, and yeah, he just loved being around people. He was just such a joy. That's like when I think of him, obviously I feel so much sadness because he's not here, but so much joy because of the love we have for him. So we had he was born with like a head full of hair, so I was crippled for heartburn. So he had really dark thick hair and gorgeous big piercing blue eyes, and yeah, just such a happy baby. Like, if you heard his laugh, he had this belly laugh from when he was so young. I remember we would be out, let's say, and Brian would be making him laugh and people would be looking saying, is that coming from that little baby? Like, he just such a deep belly laugh. And yeah, he just brought so much happiness and joy to our lives. He was thriving. He really was meeting every single milestone. And like, he was just such a little dream baby. And then he had just turned one. And the day after he turned one, he took his first steps. And yeah, he was just the missing piece of our puzzle, you know. So I suppose like things changed quite quickly when he was 13 months. So I had only gone back to work and I'd taken a bit of unpaid leave after maternity leave and I was settling back into work. And yeah, about 6 weeks into me being back in work, he started vomiting. And now when I look back, it was strange because my family actually had a vomiting bug at the time and they were minding him that day. So we genuinely just thought he's after catching this bug. So he was getting sick for a couple of days and, you know, we were doing all the normal things, looking after him, and we brought him to the doctor and the doctor thought it was just a bug. And he got better for a couple of days and then he'd start vomiting again. And then we brought him back to the doctor and, you know, we were back and forward to the doctor. And then about kind of 10 days into this, we just weren't happy and we brought him into a children's hospital. And they kind of just said the same. They were like, you know, they gave us Dioralai, they did a couple of checks on him, bloods and stuff like that, and they were kind of happy enough to send us home and said if he got any worse to bring him back, but they thought it was just something that was going around. So that went on for another week, and we just, like, I just wasn't happy. I just knew as the week went on, I was like, this isn't normal. So it was actually Halloween day. We brought him back in early that morning. So he'd been vomiting that morning, and then he was quite listless. Like, when we got to the hospital, they described him as flat. So he was waking up, but he just had no energy. He was very, very sleepy. He just wasn't himself. So they kind of did a couple of checks on him again, and they said they thought it was still this bug that was going around, and they were going to send us home again. But I just wasn't happy. I just knew, they just were kind of saying, I think he's just tired and he's probably run down from this bug. But I just, you know, your own child, this was not like Zach. Zach was so energetic and happy and full of life, and then to see him just so listless lying around, it was just, it wasn't sitting right with me. So anyway, after a couple of chats with a couple of different doctors, they kept us in, and we had to go to a COVID isolation room. So at this time, so this was October 2020, we were in level 5 lockdown. So it was a really, really tough time for people that had, well, a really tough time for everyone, but for anyone that had a child that was sick in hospital, it was extremely tough. So only one of us could be with Zach. And anyway, we were in the isolation room for 2 days, and I was with him that night, and myself and Brian were kind of taking turns, and Brian was going to come in at around 2 that morning to give me a break to go home. And Zach was just going down over the kind of couple of hours that night. And, you know, anytime he moved, he was getting sick, and he didn't look right. His colour wasn't right. He just wasn't right. So anyway, I aired my concerns again, and we had this amazing nurse who listened to them and took us seriously and acted on that. So that was about 2 in the morning, and they called a doctor who then called another doctor, and they were keeping a close eye on his stats. And then thankfully they came in at 3 o'clock and said, we're just going to start scanning Zach, and we're going to start like with his head and kind of make our way down. So we went down for a brain scan just after 3. Like, it all kind of happened quite fast then. Now at this stage, I never thought it was anything to do with his head. I didn't know what it was. But anyway, we went down for the brain scan, and we had just come back up to the room, and they just plugged his bed back in, and they had just put all the wires back on, and they had left the room. And I like still remember I was trying to make him laugh, and he actually was laughing. He kind of come around a little bit, and I think I was doing something with my hair, and he was giggling away. And then I turned around, and there were 2 doctors in the room who just asked me to sit down and said that they had really bad news, that they're after finding a large brain tumour, and that we had to act straight away, that neurosurgery, we're getting ready for him, and they'd be outside the room in a couple of minutes. And I had to make the phone call to Brian to come in as fast as he could. And our world changed. Our lives changed forever from 3:30 that morning on the 2nd of November. So just to give you a brief insight into what happened, Zach went down for surgery that night, and we were just catapulted into this world that we just knew nothing about, and we just never expected it. So we were sitting outside ICU for a couple of hours, and then we finally got to see him. And yeah, that was the start of a really scary journey. So we had found out that Zach had like a large brain tumor, and he required surgery. So we just knew it was near his brain stem. And that he required brain surgery with like really soon. So it was in 2 days' time. He had to recover from the emergency surgery that night because of the pressure on his brain. And then 2 days later, he went through a surgery that lasted 10 hours, which was just horrific when you think of a one-year-old. It was terrifying. But it was our only option at the time. So Zach went through the surgery and thankfully got through it, and a biopsy was sent off to Beaumont, and it was kind of just a waiting game. The surgery went well. They were happy with what they got. So they described his brain tumour as like it was in the shape of a sock. So it started at his brain stem and came all the way up one side of his head and ended just behind one of his eyes. So we waited a couple of days, and then we really thought that was the worst of it. But then a couple of days later, we got his actual diagnosis. So he was diagnosed with ATRT. So it's a really rare brain tumour in children, and it usually occurs in children under the age of 3. I think when we even think back now, what we went through, the trauma still gets us. It really, really does. So Zach, they made a plan anyway. So ATRT was a really poor diagnosis, especially for his age and how sick he was at this stage. So they had to go and plan more surgery for Zach. So he had to go through another operation. So this would have been his third operation to remove some of the tumour. And then the plan was for him to go into emergency chemo. And so we just moved to John's ward and kind of take it from there. They had a whole plan, like he'd have to get stem cell treatment, and there was a whole plan anyway in place, but we were really only taking it day by day. So the next step was the operation, and thankfully Zach got through the operation. He was so resilient, he was so strong, like even throughout like his whole time when he was in hospital, like he barely cried. Like he was sharing a ward with another child, and like their family were amazing, and because of COVID they were our only support in there. And like they used to say, like everything Zach is going through, like how he's such a good baby, like he's just like he's a little dream. And he was, everything he went through, like if we were going through that, God. So anyway, he went through his third operation, and they originally thought it went well, they got what they needed to, and then a day later they came back with more bad news that when they went in the third time, they could see more of the tumour starting to grow, which was like something that they'd never experienced before. So they said like within 2 or 3 days, we'd have to go and get emergency chemo, where originally the plan was some sort of rehabilitation for Zach, but that wasn't an option anymore. So anyway, that was coming into the weekend. I think his surgery was on the Friday, and we were just with him over the weekend, and we were all ready to go to Crumlin the following week. We just hadn't been given kind of a day or a time or whatever. So anyway, I think the Sunday came, and Zach took another turn. So he had got a shunt in. He had actually had a fourth operation and got the shunt in for chemo, and some of his stitches had burst, and we were worried about that, and that's where our concern was at the time. And they were bleeding and stuff like that, and they really didn't want to bring him down for a fifth operation. So that's what was consuming us at the time, were his stitches. And then he basically took a really bad turn on the Sunday. So Brian had just left. We had been living in the hospital for the 2 weeks. We were living in parents' accommodation, just tag teaming the whole time. And Brian went home to pack a bag, and he didn't. He actually got to our front gate, and I rang him, and I just told him, we've been given some more bad news. You need to turn around now. So what had happened was I just noticed that Zach was changing colour, and he just didn't look well. So I called for a nurse, and they delivered the news that they thought the tumour was actually taking over his body. So where it was starting to grow now was affecting his bodily functions. So different consultants were called in on the Sunday, and was actually then we were told that they didn't think he was going to make it through the night. So it was devastating because we were holding on to so much hope for him. Yeah, exactly. Crumlin was our branch, our olive branch that we were holding out for. So none of our family had seen him since he went in 2 weeks previous because of COVID. It was really tough when Zach was in ICU. Only one parent could go in at a time, and he was really sick. So to be on your own and go through that was tough, really tough. So yeah, so they said our both of our parents could come in and see him, because they didn't think he was going to make it that night. So it was so scary. So they came in and he actually perked up for them. They got to cuddle him, we got to sing songs. Yeah, we were just together in it. But our one wish was that we get him home. Like, the hospital was such a hard experience. So we, with the amazing work of Jack and Jill, they came in and we got him home the next day. And still then, to be honest, we were both holding out that, like, because we saw him kind of lift a little bit around our parents, that, you know, they got it wrong, or he had just taken a bad turn, but he was going to be okay. But anyway, we got home at 5 o'clock on the Monday, and all of our immediate family got to come and see him. So our brothers and sisters, and yeah, all of Zach's favourite people, well, some of Zach's favourite people. He passed away the next morning. So from the day he was diagnosed to the day he passed away, there were 15 days, yeah. So his cancer was really aggressive, really rare. So it happens to, like, one child in Ireland every year is diagnosed with ATRT. So you never think your child is going to be the one, but Zach was the one. Even the night he was passing away, that Monday night, we were still asking the palliative care nurse, is there any chance he's going to pull through? Because that's what you do as parents, you just cling on to any hope. He's like your most prized possession, you know, just the love of our lives. Like, and we didn't give up until the very end. Yeah, if you had said to me before any of this happened, like, imagine your child passed away, how do you think you'd react? And I would have probably said to you, I'd be having an absolute meltdown, I'd be screaming, I would be crying, I'd be inconsolable. And at times in the hospital and at times when it happened, myself and Brian, we had those moments. But when Zach actually passed away, we just went into this numb state, like this our body state. And so planning the funeral, so many people being around us, it was like we were just out of our body and all of this was just happening and it wasn't real. It was a nightmare. And to be honest, that numbness lasted for a lot longer than I thought it would. Like, obviously there were moments that it would hit and it was that shock and it was the panic and it was the fear and upset would set in. But for a lot of the time, even during the funeral, I remember sitting there just thinking, this isn't happening. Like, I just want to wake up now. It really was like a horror, like, you know, you were in a horror film. So yeah, I think that's what got us through those few days, just that numbness and the shock and the denial that this was actually happening. That's definitely what got us through. And I think when I speak to someone now, let's say it comes up, and I say I have two children, but my little boy passed away. And a lot of the time I know people think, he must have been sick for a really, like, you know, a long period of time, or was he born with a condition? But when I say, like, he was diagnosed with cancer and died 2 weeks later, like, I see the shock and horror in their faces, and it just reminds me of how unnatural it is. Like, you never ever ever expect your child to pass away, you never expect to bury your child. I think, you know, when you find out you're pregnant and trying to get to the 12-week stage, you're riddled with anxiety, and then you get there and then you're just hoping that everything goes okay, you know, with the birth and stuff like that. And then, like, I remember 8/19 on the 21st of September when they put Zach on my chest and myself and Brian sobbed crying, but just with happiness and relief, and he was there and he was healthy, and it was just the loveliest moment. And you just never expect then for your healthy, gorgeous, happy child to be taken away so soon. So yeah, it's just, there are no words. There really aren't. So I suppose, like, Zach, as I said, passed away in the height of COVID, so level 5 lockdowns. People were actually afraid of us. It was that time, so we're talking about 2020, where people were afraid to hug you. People were standing at a distance. Zach's funeral, like, only 25 people were allowed to go, so hundreds of people stood outside. So even that in itself added to our loss and added to our pain, because it was just this distance then between people. And I suppose in some ways, like, so many people used to drop dinners at the door or leave presents at the door. And in one way, it was helpful because, like, COVID was helpful because we couldn't face people for so long. But then in another way, even with some of our family, it was really tough that there was that distance and all of these restrictions. And we'd be driving up to Zach's grave, and every single day we'd be stopped by the guards on the way to and the way back from the graveyard, asking us where we were going. So it was just things like that, that COVID had a massive impact. And then, yeah, it's just, losing a child is earth shattering. It really, really is. Like, I don't think I can articulate the impact it's had on us. I don't think I can do it justice. I think if someone lives in our shoes for a week, 2 weeks, a month, even a day, to experience the pain, experience the loss, the fear, the anger, everything, they'd get some insight into what it's like to lose a child. I said to someone recently, we were just back from holidays, and I said, getting away helps us a little bit because it's a distraction. But then coming back, we always have a really low time because it's just a reminder. Like, we walk by Zach's room, let's say 10 times a day, and it's empty, and it's just as it was before he passed away. And we visit graveyard every single day now, where we never would have. And yeah, we're just catapulted into this new world where our innocence is gone. we don't take anything for granted. We stand by Zach's grave every day, and it's what gives us comfort. But we are surrounded by so many people each day that are passing away, and it's young and old, and it just reminds us that our time here is so precious and so fragile. Like, life is so fragile. And I suppose in one way it's reminded us that on days where we can live, to live for Zach. Yeah. So I think because of COVID, it did impact some services that are out there that help bereaved parents. So to be honest, like, the only service that really kind of stood in was First Light, and like, to this day, obviously, I still use the service. And I suppose for us as parents, Zach was diagnosed and died quite suddenly, and we never got to Crumlin to meet other parents going through similar journeys. So it was a really lonely journey and a really, really lonely road, and we felt that nobody really got it around us. So, like, First Light was the only organisation that could stand in at the time and could get it and could listen and just give us the support that we needed then and still now. Roosevelt's Rooms were another charity that gave us a donation towards Zach's funeral. And then our GP, I think those three, our GP, Roosevelt Rooms and First Light, yeah, our GP was great, and it's so important to have a good GP. I was speaking to someone recently who has lost a child, and she hasn't got a great GP, and I said to her, that's the one thing you really need. You need someone who can support you through this. Like, we went and still go through times where we don't sleep, or panic attacks living through, some flashbacks that we get or nightmares, or just really low periods where you actually need medical support. Yeah. And but a GP that will listen to you and won't rush out the door, or won't that will just try to get it and just sit with you through it and make a plan and check in with you and just give you some sort of structure to get you back to a place where you can function again. Yeah, I think it's really important to say their name and not be afraid to mention them. I think that's so important. If anybody only takes one thing from this, is not to be afraid, because you're not reminding a parent who's lost a child that they're not here anymore, because we think of Zach every single day. Like in the early days, we used to see people that would cross the road when they saw us coming. And to be honest, like, I understand that people panic when it comes to bereaved parents and child loss. And there's nothing anybody can say to make it better. The only thing that would make it better if Zach, our child, was back. But yeah, just say their name. Don't be afraid to talk about them or ask about them. I'd also say to just be mindful of what you say, because I found that people's words, while they weren't intended to ever hurt us, had such an impact. And to this day, I still recall some of the things that people said. Like, I remember one person said to me, "At least you're still young enough to have other children." And no matter how many children myself and Brian will go on to have, no child will replace Zach. Like, we have two children, and I really appreciate also when people, let's say someone is sending us a card, when somebody acknowledges Zach and Cyber with their child. I think that's so important, because at the moment we're a family unit of four, and just include the child that isn't here anymore. Zach loved rubber ducks. And that's our little symbol for Zach, and it brings us so much peace. It really does. Because whenever we see a duck, we feel it's a little sign from Zach. Like, so rubber ducks have really grown legs with us. So, like, Zach's headstone is a rubber duck, and he has about 100 rubber ducks there, and it's just because that's all we could fit. We could have 200. We've actually had to take some home. We have rubber ducks in our garden, in our front garden, about another 100 in our house. We collect them everywhere we go, and so do our friends and family, which is so lovely, because it just shows that people are thinking of us and thinking of Zach. And I can't emphasize enough how much that means, because it's somebody remembering Zach, it's somebody honoring Zach, and then they're going to the effort of showing us that, you know, they're thinking of us. And honestly, it just brings so much peace and so much happiness. I think the harsh reality is, when you lose a child, your world crumbles, and your immediate family as well. But then the world, like, life goes on for so many other people. And that's quite hard when you're in such a dark place and you feel people don't understand it, or people don't get it. Or sometimes when a period of time has passed, you feel there are expectations on you that, you know, time is healing. Where I suppose that's another thing I want to say to people that haven't lost a child, is time really doesn't heal the loss. Like, eventually, like, I can say 2.5 years on that we're learning to try to live, but the pain is still as bad. Yeah, definitely. And I actually read a really good book by this American author, Rob Delaney. It's called A Heart That Works. So Rob and his wife lost their little son, Henry, to a brain tumor as well. And he wrote this amazing book about it.
and he's a comedian as well, and he sheds such light on it, but it's not a really dark book. But anyway, he gives this amazing analogy and it just clicked with me before. So he said, think of a rainbow. So a rainbow has lots of colours in it. And those colours signify, you know, your different feelings and emotions that you experience. But when you lose a child, this dark black band appears in your rainbow. And so I thought, when we lost Zach, we honestly had no hope. We were in such a dark place. I never thought I would smile again. I never knew how I would live again. Like, even things like going to a supermarket were so difficult, and still are, to be honest, because facing people when you're crumbling inside is so difficult. But anyway, but yeah, he described this rainbow and this big thick black band, and when it initially happens, when you initially lose your child, the black band takes over your rainbow, and as time goes on, you actually get to experience those other feelings and emotions again. So, you know, you get a little bit of time where you experience happiness, or you're excited, or, you know, some optimism, you look forward. But then there's times where you go back into the black, and it doesn't have to be an anniversary or the time your child was diagnosed. It can just be pain or triggers that bring you back into that black. But it's actually given me a little bit of hope, because I know that the black is just a part of our rainbow now. It's just part of our life. Missing Zach, the pain, the loss, anger, the despair that we still feel, is a part of our life. Like, our life has been changed forever, and it's taken a long time to accept that. But that analogy gives me hope that the days won't always be black. And I suppose I'd say to anybody who's lost a child really recently, it's just about minding yourself. It's so important. So many other things don't matter. You have to just look after yourselves. Like, you have to pull back when you need to pull back. Like, we found family events so difficult, and to be honest, still do. But yeah, you just have to learn how to say no. You have to look after yourself. You have to do whatever you need to do to survive, basically. And it's just about survival. The only way I actually survived the early days was just thinking hour by hour, because if I thought how I was going to survive Christmas without Zach there, you know, Zach was our only child at the time. So things like Christmas, or, do you know, family events, or Easter, or, do you know, like, family times, whenever I thought about those times in the early days, I was floored. I just didn't know how I was going to get through them and survive. And you do. You find a way. Like, for example, Christmas time, we still find Christmas so difficult. It's a real trigger. Also because Zach's anniversary is a couple of weeks before Christmas, so we just don't celebrate it at home. The past couple of years, we've gone away, and it's our escape, it's a distraction. And yeah, we don't feel guilty anymore, because we don't have expectations on ourselves. We just are kind to ourselves, and compassionate with yourself is so important as well. And if going away for Christmas, or going away for Mother's Day or Father's Day, or doing something that gives you some sort of peace or distraction, if that's what you need to do to survive, absolutely do it. Yeah.
If you or a loved one are struggling with the sudden death of a child and are seeking support, reach out on our website and send us in a referral. We are here to help.